The following program is intended as an educational program, not as investment advice or as a recommendation to buy, sell, or participate in any investment vehicle, product, offering, or strategy. Investment advisory services are offered through Turning Point Financial, a registered investment advisor. Any references to specific securities, investment vehicles, or strategies are intended only as examples, not as recommendations. All investments involve risk, including the possibility of losing money. Welcome to Money in Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720, where every week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. Do you ever wonder how your money and the things you own are actually helping you to live out what you really feel called to in your heart? You know, there is so much peace of mind when you can sense that your money is aligned with your values and your convictions, as well as your financial goals. And there really, really is peace of mind when you know deep down that your financial goals are in sync with your values and your convictions. When that kind of alignment isn't there, oh my goodness, there's just anxiety and you end up worrying about things you just wouldn't have to be worried about. It's actually easier said than done. There is so much financial information coming at us every single minute of every single day. It can actually be overwhelming. There's terminology, there are ideas and philosophies, competing principles pulling in different directions, and of course, financial products and services. The list goes on and on. Keeping all of this straight can be downright confusing and possibly even scary. And when you are confused, you simply don't make good decisions. And that can keep you from being all that God wants you to be, and it can hurt you pretty badly as well. Well, welcome to episode 22 of Money in Mission. Did I get that right, Joe? Episode 22. I'm James Good, and Eric's not here with me for this segment, but we're looking forward to having him back really shortly. Each week on the show, again, we talk about some current events, so you'll have a better understanding of that terminology and what those events might actually mean. And part of the way through the show, we'll get to our weekly puzzler. So stay tuned. It's going to be a full hour, and we're looking forward to sharing that time with you. Well, there has been a lot going on in the markets and a lot going on in the news, especially in an election cycle. It seems like everybody's got an opinion. But if there's only one thing that you take away from this segment, I hope that you'll remember that every event, everything you hear about, has an impact. Like, it's like a domino effect. One thing leads to another, and that thing leads to another, and that thing leads to another. So one thing leads to another, to another, to another. We could have some fun with that little phrase. Another, another, and another. But remember that an economy is really just this long-running chain of events and transactions. So when one thing leads to another, that's a transaction. And then another thing happens, and that's a transaction. And then another thing happens, that's another transaction. And at the end of the day, when you sum total it all up, that is an economy. Whether you are reviewing your investment portfolio or your wealth management planning, if you're planning for retirement, or maybe you're planning a mission trip, whatever it is that you're planning, you're running your business, having an understanding of how economics work and that chain of events, that little domino impact, having a good understanding of how that works potentially can position you to be more effective in life and more confident in your planning as well. You don't have to be an expert. You just try to have a big picture idea of how this stuff works together so that you can be more effective in your planning. Well, there's an organization out there called the Conference Board. Now, the Conference Board, you can visit the organization, conference-board.org/US. I'll read that again, conference-board.org/US. The Conference Board has taken all of these financial transactions and economic events that we hear about and broken them down into three basic categories. When you think about financial news, if you can keep that in the context of a bigger picture, like break things down into different categories, then it can potentially help you to feel maybe less stressful when you're listening to the news. Because after all, this the headlines just keep rolling in. the algorithm just keeps pumping information in your direction, one bullet point after another. And I do believe that the algorithms are designed to keep you reaching for more. So you can just sit there and follow the headlines and follow and follow and follow and find that you just wind up being really disturbed and really upset and having not reached any conclusion whatsoever. So keeping things in the context of a bigger picture hopefully can help you to feel a bit less stressful because you have better context in which to understand those. So we're going to talk about those three categories here in this segment, and we'll probably run out of time, so we're going to go quickly. But again, we want to use this framework as well as part of our week in reviews, so that we'll be hitting some of these different topics as well. So the Conference Board takes these events and breaks them down into three basic categories. Leading indicators is category number one. Coincident indicators are heading number two. And lagging indicators are group number three. The reason these are called indicators is because it's thought that if a certain thing happens, then that usually leads to something else. And so if you see X happening, that indicates that maybe something else is coming along. Again, remember the domino effect. So leading indicators, there are 10 grouped together in something called the leading economic index. There are 3 financial indicators and 7 non-financial indicators. I'll just read through them briefly. The average length of manufacturing work weeks, meaning how many hours people are spending working. The Institute for Supply Management new manufacturing orders. The University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index. The interest rate spread, and that is the 10-year Treasury yield minus the Fed funds rate. Manufacturers' new orders for consumer goods and materials. The Chicago Federal Reserve's National Credit Conditions Index. Stock prices, as measured by the S&P 500. Manufacturers' new orders for non-defense goods. Average weekly claims for unemployment and building permits. So those are 10 line items that are referred to as leading indicators. Coincident indicators are changes, or they're really things that happen kind of in sync with the economic news. So that would include things like retail sales, how many employees are on non-agricultural payrolls, personal income minus transfer payments like Social Security and so on, and an index of industrial production. So these are things that they change in sync with the economy. Philosophically, you could argue probably that any one of those has a domino effect as well. But we will talk more about those in the coming weeks. Lagging indicators are, you know, if we follow through with our domino analogy, then a lagging indicator is the kind of thing that happens because the dominoes have already started to fall. So the leading indicators have already happened. The coincident indicators have already happened. And now you wind up with lagging indicators. So a lagging indicators include things like the average prime rate, the ratio of consumer installment credit to personal income. That is just how much debt people are carrying relative to the income that they have. The consumer price index for services, the inventory to sales ratio, and that is business, how much inventory businesses have compared to how many sales they have. Commercial and industrial loans, the unit labor cost for manufacturing, in other words, how much businesses are paying people to make things, and the average duration of unemployment. Now, you've heard us talk about unemployment. You've heard us talk about inflation. That really falls under what we would describe as a supplemental indicator. So there's unemployment, inflation, oil and gas prices, and the total U.S. federal debt to the U.S. debt to GDP ratio. So that's a mouthful, right? We've covered a lot there, a lot of different indicators. But the point, again, is that if we can keep in context how the news items that we hear about, the financial headlines that we hear about, fit into a bigger picture, then we can maybe be less worried about each line item as we hear it because we understand or have a better understanding of that bigger picture like that. We do want to kind of use that framework as an outline, if you will, for our week in review segments. And so we'll try to hit each one of these different indicators and different headings in weeks going forward. I will not attempt to take any more time here in this segment to, you know, really dive into all of those. We don't have enough time, but again, keep in mind the domino effect. The basic principle here is that each item that happens has an impact. Anything that happens has an impact. And we are going to have to take a break here. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Welcome back to Money and Mission, where we talk every week about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical wisdom and principles. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we really, you know, we ran across this book called The Eternity Portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And Illuminated.
I'm sorry?
The Illuminated.
The Illuminated. That's yep. Right, the Illuminated version. And this book has just, it's a powerful book. It's a powerful message.
And the author is Alan Gothard.
Alan Gothard.
Gothard.
Yeah.
Alan Gothard.
Along with special authors, I mean, contributing
providing
authors.
Commentary.
That's
throughout.
Right. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we want to begin with a story because we've talked on this podcast. We talk all the time about the importance of aligning values with our planning and our money. But so we want to cover this book. I don't, you know, there's bands out there that do covers and
we plan to cover it over two episodes.
Probably.
So this will be part one.
That's right.
And then next week we'll finish up and recap and provide our insight in part two.
That's right. But we ask this question all the time about your money and your stuff helping you to actually live out what you feel called to.
Money in mission.
Money in mission.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just such a powerful question to be looking at and doing the soul searching to say, am I doing with my stuff, the stuff that God has entrusted to me, am I doing with that what he's really called me to do? So let's just, you know, this, I want to read the first couple of pages here. There's a great story and analogy, I think taken straight out of the pages of the Bible, or at least paraphrased a little bit. There once was a wealthy man who departed on a very long journey. He planned to be gone for an indefinite period of time, maybe a few years, maybe even a few decades. In preparation for his extended absence, he called three of his trusted financial managers and divided his assets among them. "Take this money," he said, "and use it to further my interests." So the wise owner knew the abilities of each of the managers, and he divided the funds accordingly. We'll make up some names here. To Charlie Wise, he gave $5 million. To Sarah Prudent, he gave $2 million. And to Jeffrey Short, he gave $1 million. Hopefully there's nobody out there with, you know, with those names. Anyway, confident, though, that his affairs were in order, he set sail and was not seen again for many, many years. So Charlie and Sarah set to work immediately, laying out several plans for different investment ventures. Charlie had this great idea that the owner had given him about starting franchise operations for the owner's business. And so he did that. The owner's product was amazing, and it really sold itself. And those that had a need for this product just kept coming, and they couldn't help but introduce it to their friends and their acquaintances. And Charlie sent daily reports to the owner, who was nobody knew where, but Charlie was, you know, communicating with him by phone, sending him emails, and all that stuff. So over the years, Charlie had partnered with others affiliated with the owner to establish a worldwide distribution network for the product. So he really took that franchise operation and just grew it. Business was booming, and profits were really starting to accelerate when the owner returned. Now, Sarah spent a good amount of time studying written instructions that the wealthy owner had left behind. And after sending some emails back and forth to him on some initial strategic issues, she felt confident that she was headed in the right direction with her investment. So she developed a marketing division for the owner's main product and gave away free samples and promoted goodwill and interest in the owner. Sarah was in constant communication. She sent texts and emails and was able to market his true persona so effectively. Sales began to flow, and although Sarah's division did not see all the results directly, she knew from the company field reports that she was having an enormous impact. It seemed like they were just getting started when the owner returned. Now, Jeffrey was so excited about the prospect of $1 million, and he had $1 million. He was like, "Wow, look what the owner gave me. The world is at my disposal now." He seemed to recall some vague instruction about the owner's interest. But Jeffrey was not much of one for communication, and he just didn't have time to read any of the owner's written instructions. "If he's going to be away for such a long time," he thought, I really need to earn a living, right? And who knows when or if he's even planning to come back, because he didn't really make any of those announcements. Well, I don't know. These thoughts were rolling through his head. So Jeffrey set aside most of the money in a safe deposit box at the bank, and he used some to start a personal business that became pretty successful in its own right, but it was Jeffrey's business. Every now and then, someone would mention to him his responsibility as a manager of the owner's money. Then he would start feeling a little guilty, and so he would return a little bit of what he was using to the safe deposit box. He figured that in a few more years, there would be an opportunity to focus on the owner's investment. But you know how time goes by. It just passed so quickly, and all of a sudden, this announcement came through that the owner had returned. And Jeffrey was like, "Oh my goodness, Charlie could hardly contain his excitement. At first, he said to the owner, "I wasn't sure how your big idea would ever be successful, but the more we talked and the further things went, the more I bought into the whole strategy." And he handed over a bank statement that showed $10 million in the corporate account. The owner said, "Well done, my friend. You have managed my $5 million so effectively, and it is now $10 million. You could have enjoyed a lot of smaller things along the way, but I think you'll be pleased with what is in store for you." The owner explained the new and greater responsibilities he had for Charlie and the enormous reward that he had set aside for his faithful stewardship of his investment. Charlie was speechless, but he managed to stammer, "It seemed like so much for the effort I expended with your money." Seeing Charlie leave the owner's office with a dazed smile on his face, Sarah was a little apprehensive. She quietly handed over a financial statement for her division with $4 million showing on the balance sheet. "It seems kind of small after all these years," she began, but the owner interrupted her with a wave of his hand. "Oh, on the contrary, Sarah, you have done really, really well. This is an excellent return for my investment, and yet you didn't know that even a fraction of what has accrued to my financial empire as a result of your diligent efforts. Sarah was thrilled as the owner explained the vast treasure that was hers, along with new and greater roles in company management. Well, upon hearing of the owner's return, Jeffrey had scrambled to pull together the $1 million that the owner had entrusted to his care, which was in a safe deposit box. And it seemed so small after all these years that he had the bank give it to him in bags of fives and tens so it would actually look a little bit bigger and more significant. And so he came to the owner and the excuses began. He said, "Here it is, all $1 million. I knew that you were a ruthless business person, that you don't take failure lightly. It kind of scared me a lot. And so I kept all of your money safe in this safe deposit box over here. And now you can have it back." The owner was furious. "What do you mean?" he said. "Jeffrey, you didn't do anything. You just stuck the money in a safe deposit box and there it sat. Even if you had deposited it in the bank,
would have got some interest.
Would have got some interest at least. And I could have earned something. I had great things planned for you, but you basically forfeited all of that because of this paltry, no effort at all action that you took." So the owner motioned to guards that he had standing around. He said, "Take away the money from Charlie and throw him out on the street." Oh, he said, "No, take the money away from Jeffrey and give it to Charlie and throw Jeffrey out on the street. He is never again going to work with me, and I will never, ever forgive him, you know, for the mismanagement, the total mismanagement of the stuff that I gave him." So ends this, you know, little paraphrase of the tale of three managers. I think I didn't quite hit it exactly the way it says it in the book, but it's a paraphrase from,
I think we've talked about it before,
the parable that Jesus
dug a hole and
that's right.
Yep.
The parable that Jesus told in Matthew 25:14-30. And the book that we're going to be covering here over the next few segments is called The Eternity Portfolio, and it really talks about how you can structure your own financial planning, your own investments, and in a way that reflects the call that God has on your life.
Yeah. No, I think that was a great book, and It's crazy that we'll work so aligned with and with such subordinates, right, for a company that we work for, but not for God.
Hmm.
And it's crazy how hard we stay aligned with those principles, but it's because we have to see that boss at the next meeting. We're accountable.
That's
it's
right.
In your face, and everyone gets real loose because God is, he's there all around, but you only make it as important as you allow it to be. And if you don't value that, the judgment and being aligned, then you're not going to be as committed as some folks are.
That's right. Sad. That's right. So we want to spend some time unpacking some of the principles that are found in this book. But if you'd like to get a copy of it, you can find it on Amazon. And again, it's called The Eternity Portfolio. The author is Alan Gotthard, and it's spelled G-O-T-T-H-A-R-D-T.
That's right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we will jump in to The Eternity Portfolio. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission, where each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF, AM 720. Well, let's hit the week, let's hit our weekly puzzler.
Yeah.
Since we missed that in the first segment.
Yeah.
And what was our puzzler last week?
So our puzzler from last week was, it has no legs to dance, no lungs to breathe, it has no life to live or die, but it does all three. Let me read that again. It has no legs to dance, no lungs to breathe, it has no life to live or die, but it does all three. What am I? And the answer is
fire. That's right, a fire. Mm-hmm.
It dances around, it breathes oxygen, and has no life at all, but it does all three.
And it does live or die,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Can start it or put it out.
Yeah. Well, moving right along.
That's right.
That's right.
What's this week's puzzler?
Where does today come before yesterday?
Say it again.
Where does today come before yesterday?
Okay.
All right.
Well, if you guys know the answer, go ahead and email us at radiopuzzle@wealthdevelopmentcouncil.com. And if you get it right, we'll read your answer and give you a shout out here on the air. So let's jump into our next segment, James.
Yeah, we just finished talking about this, the tale of three managers.
Mm-hmm.
And
it was a great update to that parable, right?
Yeah, great update. And just in which those three managers had some responsibility for the owner's investments while the owner was away. And which really, and we're covering again a book called The Eternity Portfolio. I just love that little pun, right? We're covering a book.
Yeah.
Okay. But we really should talk a little bit about, first of all, in chapter one, the book talks about, and we should talk about it here, how a faithful manager actually invests. And I think really it's important to note that investing begins with values.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It really, like, we could say your investments reflect your values, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we've talked about the importance of aligning your investments with your values. But as we were talking about this, we realized it really doesn't matter. I mean, your investments do reflect your values.
That's right. Jesus told us. He said, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also.
That's
so
right.
Where you put your money is what you care about and what you value and what you don't not mind putting your money in, at least.
That's right. you know, when you set up your current investment portfolio, you had certain choices to make. And if you think back over the choices and how you made those choices, maybe there were questionnaires that you filled out and so on and so forth. The way you answered those questions reflects what's important to you, reflects your values. Those ideas are things that are important to you. How you go about pursuing your goals is also a reflection of your values. This is a real look in the mirror kind of thought, because investing is only meaningful in terms of your vision and your mission and your, well, as we talked about a number of episodes ago, your definition of success.
That's right. And that's different for a lot of folks. We've had guests come on where they felt called to different missions, homelessness, sex trafficking. Having your values, having that solid foundation is important.
That's right. I mean, think about this, really. We have to let this sink in. When Tom Monahan founded Ave Maria University, his definition of success informed the choices that he made. Right? We had the Mercy School Sunflower Seed Oil Project. That was episode 3.
Yeah, with Samuel and Kathy.
That's right. Samuel Kagundu. And their vision for what they're doing there at the Mercy School with the sunflower seed, their vision informed the it informs the choices they make. The reason that Samuel came here to the States trying to raise money was because he had a project going on over there. The reason Tom Monahan founded Ave Maria University is because he had a vision for what education should be. The reason Dave Hook set up Project Lamplight is because he had a vision and he had defined something that he wanted money to be doing like that. So in the same kind of way, when we say that, you know, God gives you a mission and a vision, a faithful manager there, then as faithful managers, we are called to organize our stuff in light of what God defines as being successful.
That's right. And that can, that's a strategic process.
It is a strategic process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the one thing really that anyone listening can take away is that the strategic process really should involve more than just my thoughts about myself.
Oh, sure.
Right.
Most importantly, even more about families, others, God's values.
That's right.
Not what we want.
That's right. So investing begins with values and what's important to you. And we say that we begin with the recognition that God owns everything. And God controls the distribution of wealth.
And we're just stewards of those resources with our time here on Earth.
So we, you know, I just looked at the phrase that we have here in our notes that, you know, God controls the distribution of wealth. You kind of have to maybe wrestle with that a little bit. You know, don't I earn money myself by, you know, going to work or doing different business deals?
But God blessed you with all those skills.
And the opportunities.
Your natural talents.
That's
right. Connections you make.
And because God owns it all and he blessed us with that, then we, at the end of the day, are going to have to give an account of our stewardship and what we've done with that.
Like Jeffrey with his safety deposit
like
box.
Jeffrey, that's right, like Jeffrey with his safety deposit box. Time is short and eternity is long.
Yeah. You know, that reminds me, remember that video I showed you the other day about Pastor Francis Chan?
Right.
So he's up on stage, he's got a really long rope, from one end of the stage to the other. And at the end of the rope, there's a little bit, about 3-4 inches of red tape. And he's like, this red tape represents your time here on this earth.
Right.
He's
so like, this rope is like hundreds of yards long,
yeah.
Right?
It's just looping around, going all over the place. And he's like, and everyone is stressed out. He's like, I'm going to work so hard here, here, here. And once I get to this little piece of the red tape, I'm gonna be comfortable. I'm going to retire and I'm going to do this and that. And the point of it, he's like, what about all this? What about the rest of the rope, eternity, all this time you're going to have and you're worried about the tape?
Yeah. That's right.
And that really puts it into perspective.
It does.
Eternity is long.
It does, yeah. But we do. I mean, we have this tendency to approach our investments in light of the 3 or 4 inches of red tape.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to kind
that's
of...
That's our test.
That's our test. That's right.
The tape part is our test.
That's right. So... the pursuit of material riches is not a valid goal in and of itself. It really, the, you know, stuff is what we utilize to get things accomplished. And if we're on a mission, if we're on God's mission, then that's the whole point of that. God has two objectives for money,
mm-hmm.
investing in family and investing in others.
Yeah. I know it sounds a little specific, but if you think about it, that's everything.
That is
your family and then all others around you who are still God's children.
That's right.
If you're putting your money in those two directions, I can't see how you're going wrong.
That's right. So that's, you know, really chapter one, a few of the ideas that are in chapter one of the eternity portfolio.
And then chapter two, they talk about the ultimate investment.
The ultimate investment.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the question, I guess, is aligning with God's priorities, is that an obligation or an opportunity?
Mm. I guess depending to where you've got to in your life with your spiritual side, because a lot of people feel, you know, it's an obstacle, an obligation they feel like they have to do, but... it's truly an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
It is an opportunity to do good, to connect with others, and do God's will.
Right. Now, it's an obligation as well.
Yeah, because God told you to.
God told you to. Right. So it's an obligation and an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I accepted this position as chief investment officer at Turning Point Financial. And because I accepted that, there are some obligations that go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are opportunities that go along with that as well. So it's probably a both and kind of thing, don't you think?
Yeah.
That the opportunity is an obligation and the obligation is an opportunity as well.
And I know when they're talking about the ultimate investment in the book, it poses the question, does Scripture provide a mandate for maximizing this ultimate investment opportunity?
Well, the Apostle Paul thought so.
Yeah.
Right? As he raised money in first century churches, he was thinking about the investment returned to the giver.
Mm.
In Philippians, I believe he said that he was telling people to give.
Yeah. But the important part, he said, not that I seek the gift itself, but I seek profit to which increases your account.
Right.
And that's very important.
So somehow in that giving and fulfilling that, there he saw it as profit to the giver.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right.
No, this is a good book. Let's take a little quick break here and hear from our supporters and jump back into it. You're listening to Money and Mission on Holy Family Radio.
Welcome back to Money and Mission here on Holy Family Radio, WHYF AM 720. Each week we talk about wealth management built on a foundation of biblical principles and wisdom. I'm James.
And this is Eric.
And we are working through
the Eternity Portfolio.
That's right, a book called the Eternity Portfolio. Illuminated.
Illuminated.
Illuminated. That's right.
I think that's from the commentary, maybe.
I'm not sure. I don't know, but it's a great book. The author is Alan Gotthard, and Gotthardt, and you can look up his book on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where I got it. But so we're just kind of taking some time to discuss the topics that are in this book. It's a powerful book. If you have an opportunity to buy it and read it, we'd really recommend it to you. And so we've talked about now, you know, how a faithful manager invests. And we've talked about how all investing reflects your values, whether you like it or not, and how...
Yeah. And then chapter two, we talked about, is it an obligation or an opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And we said it's kind of both.
Mm-hmm.
Really. But the value in, you know, getting into chapter three of the book, the value of being intentional.
Mm.
Right.
We talked about that too.
Yeah. I mean, this follows good financial planning anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where when you make a financial plan, you are being intentional.
Mm-hmm.
You're working at accomplishing some life goals and financial goals.
Being intentional, you're focusing your time, and also being intentional, you're not allowing your time to be wasted.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. But the value of being intentional is that planning has an opportunity to maximize giving, like not just maximizing what we're trying to get for ourselves, but it can maximize giving.
Mm-hmm.
And being intentional then and having a plan that involves giving means you're going to sit and think through exactly what you're giving to.
Sure.
And why you're giving and how much you're giving. And so planning then also leads to more effective giving.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah. It can maximize giving, and it can lead to more effective giving.
And planning also makes it easier to say no, right? I mean, when you have a goal in mind and you're committed and you're being intentional, you're not just going with the flow with whatever's going on around you. You're staying focused with your eye on the ball.
That's right. You have some things you're saying yes to, and you're saying yes on purpose. And you're saying no on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Because the things you're saying no to are simply not in the plan that you've laid out.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds so elementary, right? but sometimes it really...
A lot of people have a hard time saying no, though. They really do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I've experienced that a lot. Whether it's for like social reasons, or people get uncomfortable in certain situations, or if they're unsure, right? They don't have that plan. So they're like, maybe this will get me to where I'm trying to go.
Right.
And they haven't planned it out and realizing, you know what, that's going to put you in a hole.
That's right. Yeah. Well, planning also can make you a cheerful giver.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's easy sometimes if we're giving to feel like, oh my goodness, I'm giving because I have to.
Mm.
And suddenly I'm not cheerful in my giving.
Mm-hmm.
But what if giving was something that you planned for?
And is a result of good planning because you have money to give.
That's right.
So you're happy. Like, everyone loves to win.
That's right. And so you now have, I mean, part of achieving this goal that you have is that you're able to give.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of reason to be excited.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? We have accomplished our giving.
And when you can see the good things that are done with your money, your hard-earned money that you planned well with, and seeing the good things that are done, that will only make you more cheerful.
That's right. So giving incorporated into your planning, your wealth management plan and your financial plan, puts you on track for achieving. Again, it's a way of aligning your values and your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Planning also helps you to understand where faith begins.
Mm. Mm-hmm. You have to go back to those principles.
You do.
Why are you giving? Mm-hmm. Why are you helping? Why are these things important? And those are the seeds that God is trying to plant for us.
That's right. That's exactly right. So I do think there's biblical guidance for successful giving. And, you know, honestly, this is a topic for myself even that I feel like I'm going to have to dig a little deeper and unpack for that. But the Bible talks about a motive, right? Now, I mean, you in your notes here, you said motive question mark.
I figured you could speak on that a little, yeah. I figured that was sufficient.
Yeah.
I mean, there's principles, right?
But that is, begs the question, why are you giving, right? I mean, I don't know if you remember the story in the Bible where Jesus was standing in the temple and all these wealthy people were coming in and they were throwing some money in the box and everybody could see and they were all so proud of themselves because they were giving so much money, right? And here comes this widow who really did not have anything and all she had was two pennies and that's what she put in. And Jesus looked at his disciples and said, that woman gave more than all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think they quite got it. And sometimes we don't quite get it either, you know, because it's easier to look at a bigger pile and say, wow, that person gave more. That person had more. Just like the, you know, the three managers that we talked about, he got millions of dollars more than I did, right?
So, but proportionately.
Proportionally, that's right. So what could I possibly do? What effect could my planning have? I've just got this little bit but motive is tremendously important. And God looks at your heart, right, in that. So, and then of course the methods that are given or methods that are used.
I think that could be just straight giving cash,
mm-hmm.
charitable donations.
Right.
It could be setting up universities like Ave Maria University, dedicating your resources to mm-hmm. a good cause. I think there's different ways to be able to give.
That's right.
Not just give money, but give back. Give what you have, your resources, your talent, your money, your time.
That's right. And clearly, you know, the details that we have to work with in our country today. I mean, we have a totally different tax code, for example, than the Roman Empire had when Jesus was walking, when the Bible was written, or any of the other economic scenarios that were going on when any other pieces of the Bible were written. The details that we have to work with, the financial tools, the mechanisms are different, but the principle is still the same,
mm-hmm.
right? It really makes sense to understand those tools that we have to work with and then structure that in a way that's why we plan. That is exactly why we plan.
So let's just step back and take like an overview
mm-hmm.
of the Eternity Portfolio Strategy.
Right. Well, like anything else, like any other portfolio or any other piece of your portfolio, you have to, first of all, create a reason for it. So if there's money that you have set aside for short-term living expenses, well, the purpose of that money is short-term living expenses, right? There's a plan for that money. If there's a piece of your portfolio that's set aside for retirement, then that is there for retirement. If you have a piece of your portfolio that's set aside for education expenses, right? So you have pieces of your portfolio with goals for each one of those pieces. And so defining the goal and saying, look, here, there's a piece of my investments that is going to be set aside as the eternity portfolio. You've now created a reason for why money is in that bucket. And then you need to fund those buckets,
mm-hmm.
right? You can say, hey, I'm setting aside money for college education expenses. That is part of my planning. But if you never do anything about it, if you never put any money there, then it just doesn't happen. So it's one thing to talk about it, but it's another thing to fund it.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we do believe, and we counsel our clients like this as well, you should know where every dollar is going.
Well, what about the question we hear often? How much should I give? Right? Tithing tells us 10%. I know we've had Cody Hobelman on the earlier episode talking about his finish line concept. So let's talk about that a little bit. How much should one give?
How much should you fund into that eternity portfolio?
Exactly.
Right.
For those different buckets, like you were saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, honestly, I do think the answer could be different for different people. You know, what I need to live, the amount of money I need to live and the amount of money I need to fund various goals may be different than what you need to live.
Yes. And the book also, it talks about how the concepts of keeping up with the Joneses or, you know, I'm just trying to get ahead in this world. Those types of things, they are mind viruses.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very important not to fall in that trap.
That's right. So, you know, good financial planning software, you know, working with an advisor that is in alignment with your values, these are good ways to determine how much money you need in different pieces of that portfolio. And that can help then to begin to define how much money is set aside into the eternity portfolio.
And what I like about the book, after our next break, we're running out of time, but there's two concepts. How much is good enough? How much is enough for now?
Mm-hmm.
And how much is enough for good?
Mm-hmm.
And the book talks about how much enough for now are our current living expenses, you know, risk management, protecting the assets you have through insurance, income taxes, other living expenses, as James mentioned, investment for retirement, college, and ultimately investing in the eternity portfolio. So that's good for now. And when we come back from our break, we'll talk about how much is enough for good.
That's right.
In funding that portfolio.
Yeah. Well, actually, our break is going to be a whole week, right? Because we are at the end of our time here for today.
Oh, yeah. We'll have to pick that up in part two.
We will.
That's right. Sorry, everybody.
That's all right.
But we hope you're enjoying the book so far. Join us next week as we jump into part two. And thanks for listening. You are listening to Money in Mission on Holy Family Radio.